Well, it looks like we're off and running, and today is the third part of our session on how to begin and develop a military ministry. And today, rather than dealing with the mechanics of structuring the ministry itself, we're going to deal with selection of men for different stages of training, and then training procedures in how to train men in follow-up, discipleship, and in later stages of disciple-making. I'd like you to read, first of all, this page, if you would, if you haven't already, Training and Selection Guidelines. Have you read that yet? Okay, I'd like you to take just time to read that, if you would. If you would refrain from looking at either of those lists right now, I would like to I'd like to have you write out on a sheet of paper that you have in the booklet there a list of first of all traits, character traits, or general character traits that you look for in a man when you decide to bring him into Phase one of training, whatever type of training that is to you. What kind of character traits do you look for in a man that you want to begin investing your time in? And then if you'd make another list of traits, spiritual traits that you look for in a man that would also be conditional on your being willing to spend time with him. Joe, we're just starting to make out lists on character traits that you look for in a man that you want to begin spending time with, and then spiritual traits in men that you feel are worthy of your time and training. Let's begin by listing those things that you could recognize in the first few weeks of contact with a man. And not the spiritual traits right now, the physical traits, physical character traits. Let's list some. We'll put over here new contact. And then we'll put over here old contact. So there are some traits that you'd look for. The point being that here we would use these character traits to determine somewhat how much time we want to give the guy in the early stages of his contact. And over here would determine whether or not we want to train him or not. So here we're not really training yet. We're observing and we're determining whether we want to even take the time to teach him and to help him on a personal basis. Okay, give me some traits and we'll see if we can get them up here. Good looking. In which way?
Neat.
All right, well, that'd be a trait, I think, that you really could recognize. I don't know what else you might want to call it. Neatness, cleanliness, what we often think of as a guy being kind of sharp. A guy can look pretty good in dungarees, you know, just because he's neat. And so not every guy needs to have that trait, but it's a good one if he does. Okay, another one?
Stability.
Yeah, okay. Stability. Okay, so he's in the early weeks, you've just noticed that he's really a pretty stable character. Good. Another one?
Honesty.
Honesty. Yeah, you can pick that one up pretty fast, can't you? Okay, another one?
Huh?
Teachable. Yeah, that's a big one. Teachable.
Faithful.
Yeah. Even in the early stages, you can begin to recognize elements of faithfulness. And going along with that, if a man is faithful, he's what? As far as you're concerned.
Available.
Yeah, he's available. But you can also dependable. In Psalm 12:1, David says, Lord help, godly men are fast disappearing. Where in all the world can a dependable man be found? And he was having a hard time finding dependable men.
He wants help?
Huh? Wants help, yeah. How could we put that in a word?
Initiative.
Initiative, is that the way you spell that? Yeah.
Positive. Whew, that is such a big one.
Positive. Positive attitude. And if he's got a positive attitude, will he normally be on the victory side or on the defeat side? Very strategic. In the early stages, Roy Robertson says that he can recognize in the first 2 weeks with a man whether he is, let's see, how did he put that, the word he used? Pattern of victory. Patterns of victory. Victory. Patterns of victory. And in those early days and weeks, you can begin seeing a guy launching off in patterns of victory. And as he goes on, as the weeks go on, you recognize that he has patterns of victory in his life. He's seeking victory. He's looking for all the help. He's taking the initiative to get the help he can to have victory, as opposed to a guy who has patterns of defeat. And too often, too many of the men we work with, they have patterns of defeat. And the longer they stay around, the more clearly you see their patterns of defeat. And we often get hung up involved with them and trying to help them with their multiple problems. Yeah.
It's never worked, is it? Try to get a guy who has a defeat attitude all the time, try to convert him over.
Well, you can, but you got to work on it, and that's the next thing we're going to go into, on how to help a man with some vulnerable or weak areas in his life.
Friendliness,
right. It's an important one. And if a man is friendly, people will like him, so he's likable. And for a man to get men to follow him, he's got to be a likable guy, or men will not follow him. And so you can call that one charisma, but I usually put that under the spiritual part because I think that's a gift from God, which all of these are, the positive side at least. Well, so the opposite of this would be what? Neatness?
Sloppy.
Okay. Stability? Instability. Honest? Dishonest. Teachable? Unteachable. Faithful? Unfaithful. Available? Unavailable. Dependable? Undependable. Initiative, what?
Lazy.
Lazy, all right. Positive, negative. Patterns of victory, patterns of defeat. Friendly, unfriendly. Now, you take old Joe. J-O-E. You think of that Joe. That's one of your key young contacts right now. He's been around 6 months or less. And you think of that guy right now. Get his name, get the guy in focus. Okay, then you go down this list and see where he fits. We've only listed 11. Now you got to be very careful as you use something like this that you don't put on your rosy-colored glasses, or it will do you no good. So you really have to investigate, where is he really? Now, if this guy has got more over here than he has over here, then I'd look for somebody else to work with. So it doesn't mean that he's got them perfected, but you can see little seedlings of these positive traits. Well, I did this the first time. I stood in the back of the auditorium of this chapel where we had 100 men in Bible study. And we always had a little general session first. And I was looking at the backs of the heads of all these men, but I know almost all of them by name. And so I'd been working on this. I've worked on this list for 2 years. And so I started thinking as the general session was going on, I went down the list of these men, or the backs of the heads, and I thought, now, how many of these have got more positive than negative traits? And so I looked, and I got more fearful as I looked at the backs of heads. And when I concluded my survey of those 100 heads, I concluded that at least 80% of them had more negatives than they had positives. Now, once you start using this type of thing in your thinking, in working with a man, you can discover them very quickly. Some of them, of course, are not difficult to discover. Patterns of victory are very simple. A lot of these you can discover at sight. Friendliness. Positive against negativism. I just talked to a couple yesterday that said they just got the book by who is it? The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. And if there's a guy that is either pessimistic, which is another trait, or negative, then I would suggest that you get that book or some other like it. And get the guy thinking about being positive and all of the benefits on thinking positive. I read a medical article a few months ago that people that are negative thinkers, that they're 90-some percent of the people that end up with ulcers, that end up with nervous breakdowns and stuff because they're just constantly thinking on the negative side or the pessimistic side of things. And so it has a physical, takes a physical toll on a person's life if he's negative. Or if he's pessimistic, which would go into another trait, which I would probably list over here as you're evaluating your man, confidence. As opposed to lax confidence. What would be some other traits? Did we get all your traits up here? Any others that you had written down?
I had one daring.
Which?
Daring.
Daring, yes.
And not fearful.
Yeah, okay. Daring,
courageous. The opposite of fearful.
Okay. Yeah, well, courageous or has drive, that kind of a thing. They connect, don't they? Drive, conviction,
wholeheartedness.
Yeah, that's a big one. Wholeheartedness. And boy, whether it's... whether you recognize this wholeheartedness in this stage or in this stage... I was with one of the RDs about a year ago, almost 2 years ago, and we were discussing a certain guy that he had all kinds of problems with. And he had worked with the guy for over a year, trying to figure out his problems and trying to help him resolve his problems, but he just couldn't figure it out. And every time he thought he was really getting to the point where he was going to be able to help this guy, it was just like a greased ball bearing, you know. It just slipped right away from him again, and he'd grab a hold of it. And we were up until about 1 o'clock in the night talking about this. And we were in a motel, of all things, and all of a sudden he shouted. He said, "Oh, no!" Fortunately for them, we can't yell very loud. He said, "No," he said. And he got red in the face, and he just clenched his fists. And I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "Oh, I can't believe it," he said. He just kind of went into a self-rage, you know. And I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "Harv, 10 years ago I promised God I would not give my time to a half-hearted man, and I've been giving my life to a half-hearted man." And so right there, he decided that as soon as he went back, he was going to tell this guy, "Sorry, I have no more time for you." Wholeheartedness, a tremendous factor in training up in Timothy. Sometimes you won't really recognize this clearly until you get into an older contact stage. What was another one that you mentioned, Joe?
Sensitivity,
yeah. Sensitive. Any others?
Humility.
Well, yeah, and that'd be both, I guess, but I had it under my spiritual list. Any others? Huh?
Flexibility,
yeah. Very good. Boy, that one, you want to make sure you have in your own heart straight all the time. There are a lot of people who have left the Navigators because they were inflexible. They, I know one guy that told me once, 10 years ago or so, he said, "Harv, you know why I'm leaving the Navs?" I said, "No." He said, "It's because I can't go along with the girl-boy situation and no dating." I said, "Man, stick around. Bill, stick around, man. Things change. Man, don't leave the vision and the work and everything for that." And he said, "No." And boy, he had just gotten old. You know, just it had eaten away at him for so long that that's all he could think. That he just couldn't stay because of that one. Well, I know of other guys that have had problems the same way, but if you stayed around until last night... fortunately, the organization is flexible. I mean, we have flexed about 964, you know, not just 360 over the past 20 years, the past 10 years. I would say there's little that we do that is similar to what we did 10 years ago that we do now in both training techniques and ministry techniques. There are a lot of principles that are the same that I'm sure will never change. But flexibility, a very, very, and it fits right in with teachability, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
Is this where you would begin to look for altitude or capacity? Or would you
say? Yeah, well, you can begin recognizing that here. I probably wouldn't determine on whether I spend time with a guy on that basis. But that would be a factor in determining whether over here, you know, you kind of watch that guy, his head just emerges a little bit higher above everybody else's. And so as soon as you've got a slot for training a man and he's moved his way into the ministry team and he's been faithful for a certain period of time and he shows those leadership characteristics, that's the kind of a guy you want to pour your life into training. This is still kind of the idea of the helping and teaching part of developing the man. This can be the peripheral ring of Bible study contact and the ministry ring phase of contact. This is more the idea of the training concept over here in the phase, that phase, yeah.
Harvey, when you say helping and teaching, is this basically the group context and then the training is the man-to-man, or is there man-to-man and coaching also?
Oh, well, your man-to-man is basically training. Your man-to-man takes place in both places, both in the helping stages as well as in the training stages. But you're pretty selective on who you help and who you train. So the point is, in your case, you'd be spending your time training men in the advanced stages, and they would be meeting man-to-man with guys in the younger stages of maturity. And then those guys would be meeting with their brand new contacts on a man-to-man. So you do not meet with men on a man-to-man basis that are not within a certain level of maturity, which are your key men, your top men, your team leaders, or whatever they might be.
May I ask a question about your days in North Carolina? I've taken your side on this for about 8 years now. I talked with a young fellow out of Camp Lejeune who had been there when you were there. And he said, I could not talk with Harv Osland. He said, I just couldn't even talk to him. Well, now I know better because he could go to rallies and, you know, you shot the breeze with guys at rallies and all that. But what kind of a buffer or, you know, chain of command or whatever you call it, I mean, what do you recommend along these lines so that, you know, Joe New doesn't just roll in and sort of commandeer somebody else?
And that's the problem, see. In most cases, it's problem guys that want your time. Mm-hmm. Your guys that are on the victory side, they don't ask for your time. Because they know you're so busy helping those poor guys that have got all those problems. So you do have to establish some kind of a shield and with some kind of PR so that you don't just tell the guy, well, you're not good enough for me to meet with. You know, that just wouldn't be too good.
How do you manage?
Well, I'll usually, like right now, I'm in a little different position, but I'll have a lot of guys that are DMs that'll come to me, call me, or come to me with a problem. And I'll say, well, you know, I could probably help you with that, Joe, but I really don't think I could help you as much as Dave Johnson could, or as much as Jim Truller could, who's right out there in the thick of it. He's on the front line, and I am telling the truth on that. Jim can help him a lot more because for several years I've been, I managed to scratch around out there in the grass every now and then, but I'm not out there all the time. And so that's one way. And some of my closest friends, those are the hardest ones. You know, for 3-4 years, I let these guys come in and I'd spend hours with them. Well, then to change that, that's very difficult. So, but I've changed it. And so at this point, nobody other than my staff and team leaders, I just don't spend time with unless I take the initiative to spend the time with them. In other words, there are certain guys that I see coming along or a team leader tells me about, and I like to get to know them a little better and enjoy the maturing of this man along with him and put him kind of in my little future book also. So,
unless you spend the time with the men farther up, nobody will.
That's right.
And if they're not ministering to these men, they won't be ministering, but you don't have to have them there.
That's right. And if I spend time, every hour I spend with a man that is not in my molecule, and I could give you an illustration of that. Here I am. That's me. This is my boss. These are my peers. Over here, these are my peers. And these are my, this is them. That's those men that I am directly responsible for. And then their men. That's those, you know. Now, my responsibility is this, right there. That's my molecule. And any time I get out of that molecule, then I am really overstepping. If I come down here, I'm overstepping my man that is responsible to me. And that is not a nice thing to do. Now, it's all right to fellowship, to get with one of his guys, and almost every time I take the initiative to do that, I talk to him about it. And, of course, he gets excited about my getting time with the guy. Now, if the guy comes around here, I just send him back there.
But then to do that, you've got to pick the right of them.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So I got a lot of boss-imposed time. And that's number one priority. Anything my boss wants me to do, I do anytime. I have nothing more important. I have plans for the whole week, and the boss says, "Harv, I'd like you to come out here to D.C., out to Chicago." I say, "How soon you want me there?" He says, "Well, can you get here by 6 o'clock tonight?" I said, "I'll be there." Man, I got plans, I got conferences, I got places I got to speak. What do? I call up Dave Johnson. "Hey, Dave, I'd like you to take my speaking engagement." I don't give him an option. He reports to me, just like I report to Jack. And so I say, I've got to go see the boss, and usually if Dave's got something on, I may tell him, "Well, would you please call so-and-so or so-and-so and see if they could take it." Point is, I never tell the boss that, "Well, I'm too busy." Now, if he wants to ask me, he can say, "By the way, what do you got going on?" And every now and then Jack will ask me that, and I'll say, "Well, nothing very important." And so rather than even bother him with the things that I'm doing, unless it were very strategic, then I would say, "Well, I'm in the middle of getting ready to give the opening message at a conference. However, I know that Dave Johnson or John Ed Robertson could take that for me. So, there's no problem. I'll be right out." And then he has the initiative to say, "Well, it's not that important. Why don't you hit that and come out tomorrow?" Or he can say, "Well, I appreciate that, Harv. Come on right out."
So you have to keep constant, any time, train men to take your place.
That's right. Yeah, you got to have somebody that can fill in for you. So well, you know, they're doing it right now while you're gone this week.
You're setting a pace on availability there, aren't you, for your men?
Yeah.
Expecting them to do that and you're doing it yourself.
I was riding in a car down to pick up Helene Ashker from the airport. My wife and I in the car, and we went to get her. I'm sorry, she had already been picked up, and we were meeting her at one of our girls' apartments. So on our way driving down there, I said, honey, you know, we really need to be available. And I started preaching her a little message on availability and how important it is to be available to your boss at all times. And I said, you know, if Jack were to call me right now, and I was right in the middle, the next day was some training thing. I can't remember what it was now, but it was something that I was all involved in. I said, you know, if Jack were to call me today and say, Harv, I'd like you to come to Chicago. I said, you know, I'd be on my way. And I was trying to explain this to her to show her how important this was so that she could likewise understand this. We got to this apartment, and Helene said, oh, by the way, Harv, Jack called, and he'd like you to call him right back. I said, where is he? She said, in Canada. I said, okay. So I dialed the number, and Jack says, hi, Harv, how's it going down there? How would you like to come up to Canada? I said, oh, man, I'd love to. He said, are you free? I said, sure. He said, how soon can you be here? I said, well, man, I don't know. I'll have to check the schedule, but I suppose I can be there in a few hours, 3-4 hours. I'll have to go home and get a suitcase. He said, well, why don't you give me a call and let me know when you're arriving. So I went home, got my suitcase, took off from the airport, got on the plane, went to Canada. I was there in about 4 hours. I had a perfect opportunity to demonstrate to my wife what I had just got through saying. Now that's loyalty. It's confidence in your boss. It's wholeheartedness. It's a sensitivity. And this boss-imposed time always comes first. Second comes peer-imposed time. And third comes them-imposed time. That is, they're imposing on your time. Now, this is a management-type thing for a business, but if you think through on it a little bit, you can see how the application is as well to us, though we don't have quite as much on this. But the more delegation you can give to these men, the more time you have for self, I'm sorry, this should have been self-imposed time. And then part of your self-imposed time is them. So, but in your self-imposed time, you've got things you want to develop, you've got thinking time, you've got planning things, you've got strategy that you're working on, and this is all self-imposed. So in order to be able to get time to do that, you've got to get your them to do the ministry with as much responsibility as you can give them so that you've got more time for thinking and planning and praying and studying.
Is there realistically very much of a problem of administering yourself out of the ministry?
Oh, yeah. That can be very seriously. So I just found one of our teams where the staff man had done exactly that. He had just become too much of a manager, gotten himself organized right out of it. So he had four team leaders, and he wasn't going out in evangelism. He wasn't, he was just too busy. Well, I helped him with that. So I helped him. Well, I helped him to see that he had to set the pace because he wasn't in a managerial position. He's a contact point. And a contact point and an area rep, for the most part, should really be involved in the grassroots. So if you're an area rep and you got several team leaders, you just go out with different ones in evangelism. This one this week, that one the next week. And then you are getting time with this men, and you're getting time with your team leaders and finding out what they're doing with their men So you really are right in the thick of things at all times.
Are you attempting to disciple as an area representative the troop in the barracks if God has so provided that there are a few team leaders who are doing that?
Well, you can pick one up. You can pick one up. I like to have, I've got a guy right now that's a disciple that I'm working with on the backstroke. And he just happens to be a very special guy. He was an assistant to Nixon. He got out of that about a year ago. He's 28 years old. Tremendously sharp young man. And he is selling encyclopedias now because he wants to make himself totally available to me for training. And so I've just taken him on as a little side project because he's a pretty big man. It's a real privilege to work with him. And I believe that we're really going to have a wiener one of these days. And it's fun. I really enjoy being involved. So even as an area rep, you can pick up a guy down the line here as long as so-and-so hasn't led him to Christ, you know. You can't take a man away from him.
So, do you attempt to have that man also sort of involved or relating to
another team? Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. In most situations, in this one, the guy is a businessman, and so he doesn't relate to any other team. Although I have gotten him involved with some of the college gang, he and his wife, on some of their rallies and conferences and stuff. Okay, well, let's carry this thing on a little further, and you can look over that list that I've drummed up. As to the second stage here, the older contact, you look for leadership ability, that is the achiever instinct. And for years, I really felt that I was not a leader in any way because of my background. I looked at my background. I had never been president of anything, you know, in church or at school or anything. I think I was made in charge of the Red Cross collections once or something, and I never excelled in sports, so I was involved in them all the time, so I was never a star, you know, in sports. And I just never saw myself as an achiever. So I was talking to Jim Downing about this, and I said, you know, it seems to me that in spite of my lack of leadership, God has used me a little bit anyway, and he's probably given me a little bit of leadership ability. And it wasn't something that I was born with. And he said, well, I don't think so. He said, let's go back on your life again. What'd you do at a young age? And so I went back a little further. Then I remembered that about 11 years old, I started a magazine route. And I started selling magazines all around until I got a newspaper route when I was 11 and a half. And I started a newspaper route, and then I got a second newspaper route, so I worked both of them. And then there was a contest out on the most subscriptions within a certain period of time, and you'd win a certain contest and a prize. And so I was the winner for the state of Minnesota for subscriptions. And so I got my mother a nice, beautiful set of dishes out of that and so on. And well, some of these things started coming back, see. And so though there were phases of my life where it didn't seem that I had this achiever instinct, apparently I had. Then after I got through with the newspaper route, I got into a printing deal in junior high school, so I'd get a few hours work in a local print shop making 50 cents an hour. And then I started working in a grocery store because I got a little more money, and then I worked in a drug store because I got a little more money at that, and I worked in a dime store. I got a nickel raise there. And, you know, I began to see that though I had never been much of a hero at anything, that there was that something in me, which I guess you could call an achiever instinct. And this is really important as you start zeroing in on men that you're going to choose to train, to pour your life into, to build. You've got to look at some of these characteristics, because if you train a man who is not a leader, then you've trained a guy that's going to just kind of tag along. And you need guys that can multiply what you're doing. So the guy might be a real nice guy. So a few of these, like uses resources, bands a team, is a nonconformist, he's a strategist, he's independent in the right way, he has learned how to appropriate things that you share with him, he has some teaching abilities, and so on. Those are things that I'd probably look at more in that stage. Okay, then on the spiritual strengths, I guess, did you list some of those? If you did, let's just riddle some of those off. Did you get some spiritual strengths, that characteristics?
Faithful, humble, loving, sensitive, disciplined in the basics.
Okay, good. Any others?
Heart for people.
Huh?
Heart for people.
Heart for people, yeah. burden for people or whatever.
Heart for God.
Evangelist. Yeah, he has some guys have got a gift for evangelism. Boy, when you find one of those guys, latch on to him. They're rare. Boy, you can sure use those guys. I do not have a gift for evangelism. Anytime I move, I always make sure I take along one of those guys that has that gift. We don't have many. I'd say out of 500 or 1,000 on the East Coast, I can't think of over 3 men that I would say have a gift of evangelism. Boy, those guys keep pouring them out. Really exciting. Well, generosity is a big one. There's a passage, I can't recall now where it is, generosity is an evidence of purity. And what a challenging thought that is, huh? He's thankful. Think through on your guy on that. How about thankful? Is that guy thankful? Boy, that's a big one. Just being thankful. Boy, there are so many guys that will come and complain and they'll tell you what you're doing wrong, but how about the guy that tells you what you're doing right and is thankful for the hours you're investing in him? Heeds counsel. He has understanding. I won't go into that. Those other two pages that follow that, you can. That's just kind of a guideline. I'd like to jump into this next phase for a minute. If you'll notice that list on follow-up, this is a thing that we've used on shelves and packages. And you have a blank sheet with some lines on it that I would like you to fill in. And first of all, on follow-up, you've got a young babe in Christ, or a young contact, and you want to start teaching that guy some of the follow-up basics and how to pass them on to another man. Now, your intention may not be for him to pass them on right away, but you want to convey them to him in a way that he'll be able to pass them on to another man when he gets another man. So, this is just a guide on some shelves. The assurance of forgiveness would be the shelf. The package would be beginning with Christ or various passages. On the quiet time, let me give you a sample of this so that you'll know how to fill in your own. On the quiet time. All right, here's the shelf. Quiet time. Now, I want to build one package or maybe two on that to help him get going in his quiet time. So I say, okay, here, I want to have you take this little booklet this week, and it's called 7 Minutes with God. And what I would like you to do is read that through. I'd like you to underscore those things that are really important things in this time with God, and I would like you to boil it down to the top five. The top five things that you think are most important in spending the 7 minutes with God. And then as you practice this week, spending 7 minutes with God and the format that He suggests, then I'd like, you know, just to have you let me know how you felt about doing that. Now, very simple package. So the next week, you get together, and one of the first things you say, you know, you don't have to dive right into it. You howdy a little bit, but somewhere within the first 5 or 10 minutes, you say, well, by the way, Bill, how'd you like that little 7 minutes with God? And so he says, well, it was pretty good. Well, let's go over what you got out of it. And so maybe the week before you tell him, bring that little book with you next time. We'll discuss it a little bit together. So he brings that book and you break it out and he shares what he thinks the top five things are. Well, you've read it this week just to refresh your memory. And you've kind of jotted down a few points yourself. And you praise him for his findings. You enter into it with him. And then you ask him now, just what were some of the things you got out of your devotions these mornings? And so you go back to the passages that he did this in, and then you kind of enlarge on it, huh? You just kind of share some goodies relating to that. And so you spend at least a half an hour on this little package. And then you break it into heart-to-heart time. So this is kind of a mechanical thing on starting your man-to-man time, but it gets you off on a positive note, gets you off on something that you're building into his life, and then you can move from that into something that's on his heart or in his thinking, and so you start asking questions. Once you've kind of gone over what he's done, and you just say, by the way, what's really been on your heart this week? Or how's Jim doing? Or how are you doing on such and such that you've been working with him on or something? You get it into heart involvement. So that's just the type of package. And what I'd like you to do is fill in that blank sheet a couple shelves that you feel are very strategic in the first 7 weeks of contact with a man. And write down a couple shelves and then packages on what you would do to help him develop in that area of his life. So you can pick any of those shelves that you'd like and then just think through on the kind of packages you could present to him. Seldom in the early stages of your contact with this new convert or new contact would you go into more than one package per shelf. As the need arises or as you think you want to cover more on that particular shelf, you do so. But one of the things I want to do in my first early contact with a guy is get him through about the first 10 of these things that I have listed in the stage of follow-up. Assurance of forgiveness, quiet time, the wheel, the word, prayer, obedience, witnessing, lordship, giving, and purity. And perhaps a couple of those others. Now, let me hear what you did on that. Somebody want to volunteer what you had down as a shelf and what you put down as a package? Okay, Mark?
I put down the Beginning with Christ packet.
Mm-hmm.
The first week, I'm going to go over assurance of forgiveness and assurance of salvation.
Okay. Now, the shelf then would be what? The shelf would be assurance. And then your package would be how to build that assurance into his life. And so you use the Beginning with Christ packet. Okay, now what kind of assignment would you give him on that? See, that's what you have to do. You have to write out what assignment You'll give him. Okay, now what would you have him do with that?
I'd have him memorize the verse on assurance. And I'd ask him what I see.
Okay, now how about you're going to have them read the leaflet in the beginning with Christ? Okay. Then if you give them some little assignment on that reading. So you tell them now, on this leaflet, boy, it's really good stuff. And what I'd like you to do is pick out the five best verses that you come across on that. As you look them up, you pick out the five best ones that you think best demonstrate that we really have assurance of our salvation. And so it's not a great deal more, see, but it gets him writing something down, and then you can even say, and then in a paragraph, write out why you have assurance of salvation. See, that kind of puts a sealer on it. So it's not a big assignment, but boy, that is so juicy. It seems so simple. And that's exactly the way you got to keep it. But don't make it too obscure. See, don't just hand them something. You know, people hand out books all the time.
Records on this?
The only records I keep in the... we have one form that I don't have in here that we keep on a guy for the first 3 months of his contact. And so it's a maturing thing, book one, book two, book three, and along with it, progress in the TMS. I had started TMS, halfway through TMS. Yeah, that's some of that is in here. But if you'll notice here, we start with book four for our evaluation. So this is men that are continuing on. The other form that I use is to get the names of all those that come into contact. And but we don't carry all those on as they drop out, and we drop them off, and we enter them in this as they progress into book four. Did I answer your question, Joe?
Well, I got to confirm that you do keep some kind of records. I'm wondering, you might prepare this, say you're meeting with half a dozen guys, and you don't give them the same assignment, you forget what you gave them.
Yeah.
And you lose track, and you come back, and you really don't know where you are. And really doing what you plan to do, you don't do it
because you blew it. You come back and
right.
You forgot what you did and you don't remember. Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yep. Any other questions? Or suggestions? Okay, let's have another one. Somebody else share yours.
On that, I think that's my experience has been that somehow you got to keep some kind of records or you will forget.
Yeah, right.
You got to come up with some kind of method.
Yeah.
That you're old, so that you're doing.
You know where you're going with your man. That's right. I have another little form that I didn't bring along that I evaluate the stages of growth of a disciple. And I have about 150 checkpoints on that are the obscure factors in a man's growth. For instance, does he have the fruit of the Spirit in his life? Joy. To what extent does he really evidence joy in his life? Is it consistent or isn't it? And you think through on your man, and you can see a lot of weak areas, and there's actually a checkoff in there. So you can keep, as you evaluate the man with that checkup sheet each week or each month, you can see what you want to work on next. So you're right, some kind of a form that will help you keep record of where you've been and where you're going. Somebody else want to read a shelf and package? Okay.
We had the word for the shelf and the word hand for package. Go over that with him, and then an activity would be for him to check the verses that I gave him and see how they relate.
Okay, now just can you explain a little more how you would give him the assignment?
How
you'd give it to him, yeah.
Well, I'm going over this. I had put down verses for each finger of the hand. And I'd ask him to, because this is the Word of God, I want him to check in his Bible where find these verses and then relate them to me, and then next week we'll just review this and see how it checked out.
Good. Okay, and depending on the type of man or the maturity of the man, you could add a little more meat to that. You could ask him to write a little bit, a little resume on which finger he feels is the most important and why, from the scriptures that you give him to look up. Another way you could do it, I like to keep from doing as much as possible for him. But I may give him a chapter. I may say, why don't you read Psalm 119 this week? Now, there are a lot of verses in there. So take it a section at a time. And then you look to see how many verses in there are on the Word. And then you list the different applications that you can see from the Word, what David is in fact suggesting. How the Word should be important to us and what it means to us and what part of our life it should have and so on, you know. So, well, it could be, other than Psalm 119 is fun for anybody to read. And then you'll get more out of that one as he comes in and you discuss it together. Now, that may be one a little further down the line, like in the disciple stage, or the next round you go on the Word shelf. You could also show him the hand, you know, illustration on how it works, and then you could tell him, now next week, why don't you give me that back after you've done this little study on the hand, show me how you can share that with another guy, you know. Okay, good. Another shelf package?
One on assurance of I wouldn't use it on everybody, but just on some. You have them read 1 John and then answer some questions. What is eternal life? How does it relate to you as an individual? And does it pose any problem? So then
good.
I can give some real feedback on the problem or anything that you really discuss and give an open door to go into other areas of that he may himself uncover and relate to you through that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One more?
My prayer with Matthew 6, the Lord's Prayer. Let the guy go over that and determine from that some basic general guidelines of prayer, which he can put in practice, analyzing.
Now, if you were to say, I'd like you to come up with 5 guidelines for prayer, that'll cause him to think 5. There must be 5 in here. Mm-hmm. And then he'll kind of look for those. That little thing like that will help to keep it from being obscure as much as possible. You know, it's just like your little kitties. When you're explaining things to them, you want to be very precise as you explain it to them. Good. And then you may want to take it another week on prayer and have them write up a list, or you may give them both of them at one time. Then a little later on, the next time around on prayer, where he's had a little more maturity in his life, you'd want to perhaps go into the prayer hand and a little deeper into that whole thing. If you'll notice on my lists, I had those basics strung across all 3 stages of development. So like in quiet time, when you've had a guy around 2 years and he's still reading a psalm every day, you know, there's something wrong with this guy, and that'll get tiresome. And a guy gets fed up with drinking milk, you know. You get a little bit older, you need a little meat, you need some vegetables. And so I think one of the reasons a lot of Christians drop out of the battle is because they starve to death. They get so busy doing things and active, and they've never changed their devotional time. Well, boy, you can get your devotions into really a chewable feast. And I share with men in various stages, different ideas that I've come up with, and just devotions. Where with my staff, I get them into almost a theological study in the morning. I like to really challenge them on using some kind of an aid, like a commentary in the Old Testament, show them how to do their own self-investigation, and then use a commentary along with it. I've been doing this for about 10 years, and it's really exciting. But it you can't do it in 10 minutes. So you got to plan half hour, an hour. I usually plan an hour on that. But it's if you don't change it, and if you don't upgrade it, it becomes monotonous, and you get unmotivated, and pretty soon you stop having your quiet time. Okay, I'd like to go into one more stage on this, which I've suggested on this page, Disciple Maker Package Illustration. If you'll notice that, that's just before the follow-up list. And this is, in fact, a thing that I did with two of our men out on the East Coast, two of our staff, that at different times. The first one, I didn't realize what I did. The second one, I saw the need, and I realized what I had done with the other one, and I was able to put it into a shelf and package plan. So this guy, he's a very capable young man, very sharp, has had a very responsible position in the Navy as an officer, and he was living in my home. One day he said... I told him to cut out 10 pieces of paper for me. I showed him the way I wanted them cut out, and then to punch 3 holes in each. And so he took this and cut them out, brought them to me, and he said, "Boy, Harv, thanks a lot for the opportunity to do that, because it's the first thing I've done right in years." And I couldn't believe it. I thought, good night. He's got to be kidding. But the more I observed this in his life, the more insecure I saw that he really was, or the more pessimistic he was about himself and his abilities. So I started working on it. What I came up with was a shelf on confidence. He lacked confidence in himself. So I thought, okay, confidence. Now, what is confidence made up of? You know, a person that's got confidence, what do they have? What can we work on?
He knows who he is. He's identified himself.
Yeah?
Give him something he can succeed in.
That's right, okay? You got to give him something he can succeed in. Now, that's a workable little package. Now, how about a scriptural package? What kind of a scriptural package could we give him? What could he do in the scriptures that would build this? If a man doesn't have confidence in God's being able to use him, what does he lack? That's right. Or what else in God? Faith in God. Basic faith. Okay? Boy, faith. Ooh. All right, I landed on it. Now, guy needs faith. So, now this again is one of the guys that I'm meeting with. He's a DM or a team leader or whatever you call your top men. So, I can give him a pretty healthy package. So I say, well, let's see now, on faith. Tell you what, Chuck, what I'd like you to do this week is, we talk about this, you know, and I say, boy, it's rather obvious, Chuck, that you really don't have a lot of confidence in yourself, do you? And he said, boy, that's putting it mildly. I've never been able to do anything right. I said, well, that's not true, because you did quite well in the Navy. Well, yeah, I guess you're right. But see, in his thinking, he's never done anything right. So, I said, now, it seems to me that confidence and faith in God overlap. They kind of mesh. So, I would say that it's a good possibility that your lack of confidence actually weaves into a lack of faith, a lack of faith in God. Now, let's do a study on faith. I'll tell you what I'd like you to do this week. I'd like you to take three characters out of Hebrews 11, and I would like you to read the entire passage on all three of those characters this week. And as you read through it, I would like you to write down factors that you can see in their lives on what demonstrated faith in their life and why they had this faith. What did they do, or how did they act for them to demonstrate this faith in their life? Now, you list those things on those three characters.
Can you come up with a package or an assignment for a man like this to do? Have you done it yourself?
Oh, no.
Is it something that you're working on
for him,
and you don't have to have done it yourself?
That's right. Yeah. Now, if I knew what he was going to do, then I would read it also that week.
Sure.
But I don't have to even read it. So he comes back the next week, I can just say, hey, what'd you find? See, I don't need to read it. Then if I want to, I can go back to the passage where he said, well, this is where it was. And I'm pretty familiar with those characters anyway. And so there's a lot I can ad lib on without having to restudy it. So he comes back next week. And he's got 10 things on each of these three characters. And he's kind of excited about this. You know, he says, boy, you know, those men were really great men of faith. Yeah, that's right. Well, now, what I'd like you to do this week is I would like you to list, from the 10 under each of those, I would like you to list how you compare on each of those. And where you lack what they had, I would like you to write why you lack what they had. That's his assignment. So he takes that back. And he tries to go to work on that, and he thinks through on it. See, what I'm really getting him to do is think Scripture, faith, and as he studies Scripture on that, it's going to be very obvious to him that faith is just as available to him as it was to Moses. This same faith is as available to him. Now, while we're doing this, then a third thing that I might have him do, the third week, I might say, now I would like you to take several passages out of this. I would like you to claim promises on these issues. I would like you to write a prayer out to yourself, to God, that God would build confidence and faith in your life. Now, while he's doing this, we have another shelf going on at the same time. So I gave him this paper, and he cut it, and he was successful, and it really boosted his ego. It boosted his confidence that he was able to do something right. So the next time, I give him something a little bit bigger, something that he has to think a little bit on. And then pretty soon I give him a responsibility for assistant at administrative director of a conference. So I make sure that he's with a guy that is really good. I check with the guy that's going to be the director, and I say, no, look, I'd like you to give John Ed or Charles Sullivan or whoever it is that was living with me, I'd like you to give this guy this project, and or some projects, but I want you to line it out there real clear so that he knows what to do, but let him take the responsibility on it. And so he guides him in the responsibility of the assistant job, and he gives him certain things for him to do that he can do, and when he accomplishes them, then it's praiseworthy. Now, he gets through with the conference. Boy, the thing has come off great. And I go up and I say, John, boy, that was great. You really did a good job. And boy, he is encouraged. because he knows he did a good job. And the next time we have a conference, I make him administrative director. Boy, he knows how to do it because he was right in the thick of it and got trained by this guy in doing it. So now he's admin director and he does it, does a good job. I say, boy, John, that was a great job. And then a little bit later, I make him conference director. And I do it because I know that he can do it. And he's scared, you know, but he knows how to do it. He does it. And I say, boy, great job. And boy, confidence is just building up, but it's simultaneous while we're doing some of this. It's all connected. And all of a sudden we get a guy who's got more confidence than most extroverts. But it's based on godly, scriptural principles. See, there's no, Moses had no inside track on faith. Not any more than we have. In fact, we have greater accessibility to that ourselves through Christ and through the Holy Spirit dwelling in us. So this is a way that you can use the shelf and package idea. So as you're evaluating your man, let me give you a hypothetical problem. Let's say that this isn't hypothetical. This actually happened. I come home from a trip, my wife and I, and I discover that some of my shaving lotion is gone. Or that my shaving lotion is left out on the shelf, and I never leave my shaving lotion out on the shelf. And then I discover that something else is missing. Some little thing. Maybe some tangible little thing that would be relatively inexpensive. And so I talk to this guy living in my home. I say, by the way, did you use some of my stuff while I was gone? And he says, well, yeah, I did. He may hem around and say, that's really interesting stuff. I understand that comes from France, that shaving lotion, and I've never seen it before. Is that where it comes from? And I say, I think it did come from France. Did you use any? And he says, I just happened to see that on your shelf in there, and I went and I looked at it, and I saw that that it had some kind of interest. And I've heard about this before, and so I just thought I'd smell it. And I hope you don't mind. I said, did you use any? And he says, I never get a clear answer out of the guy. So a little bit later in the day, he comes and he says, boy, Harv, I'm sorry. I used some of that. Or he maybe said, no, I didn't use any. I just smelled it. Well, what do you do on that? If you had that guy in your home, what would you do? What's the problem?
Insecurity.
Yeah, okay.
Dishonesty.
Integrity. Huh? Okay, so you build a shelf. Integrity. See, boy, all of a sudden you found, this guy's got a problem. I got to go to work on that thing. It's a little thing. Man, I don't care if the guy uses my shaving lotion. In fact, I told him, I said, you can use all of my stuff. Just tell me. It's all. Just tell me. I just want you to be honest with yourself and then honest with me. And honestly, I'll buy you a bottle of it if you'd like it. But I don't care. You can use it. I'd like you to use it. But don't sneak it. Integrity. So you see a point where, okay, now what do you do with that one? Put some packages on there, see? Okay, what are you going to have them do? What are you going to have them do to build integrity? Yeah, okay, a study on what? Okay, so what would your basic study be? What would your What would that? What topic would you do a study on?
Maybe on truthfulness.
Truthfulness or honesty.
Honesty.
Right. So you might do a honesty. See, and this is what we actually did. So then I said, okay, now what I'd like you to do. Here are 8 passages on this subject, and I would like you to get a few more of them. But you see, we don't have a one-week problem here. This guy's lied all his life. So you're going to have to do more than just 1 week little study on honesty. You're going to have to do little projects on the side. You're going to say, well, now, Bill, I want to kind of go over this with you, you know, and I want to check in. I want you to be honest with me. And I'm going to trust God, and I want you to trust God to build integrity in your heart, to take away this habit of lying from your heart. And he's very cooperative, you know. He wants to get rid of that thing. And the guy is almost like a kleptomaniac. He's lied for so many years that he doesn't know how to refrain from lying anymore. Well, so you see, you get the thing out in a workable fashion. Integrity. What do? Honesty. You know, and doom, doom. Another one is a guy who's always got the answers. He's always answering out. He doesn't let anybody else answer. He's always got the right answer, you know. What do you do with that? Well, there's a problem with the tongue. And pride, of course, but pride is much too broad to make a shelf on. So you got to boil it down a little more, so you put tongue. Okay, now what are some packages you can do on the tongue? Boy, there's some good studies in the New Testament on the tongue. So it's a little gimmick that you can use in really resolving some of the problems of your key men.
So what you do, you isolate the problem, and then I just give the references to begin, give an assignment, and then work it back and forth. That way, without you, again, having done it yourself.
Uh-huh. Or I may do it with him. Like this one, I would do it something with him. And I might do just my own on it. I may say, look, why don't you do a study on honesty in the Scriptures? Use a concordance, come up with it. I'd like you to get 6 hours on it this week. And we may bypass with your advanced personnel on some of these major problems. You'll want to maybe make it their Bible study project for several weeks. So he won't be able to put all that time on that and then do his regular Bible study on top of it. So that's what I would do. So sometimes I'll just say, you do a study on honesty and you figure it out yourself.
So you have 2 shelf building, one of studying the word, one of
practical, yeah. As much as I can think of things to do for him, or help him, or encourage him to do, or check in on things. A guy's got a problem with sex and his thought life, and well, he wants help on that. Well, you can get checkpoints on that. You can work up little deals with him where he can contact you. Bob Foster would tell a guy that he could call any time of the night when he got a problem. Just call him. And he'd get calls often back in the old days at the service center in the middle of the night. Man, Bob, pray for me. So, yeah, I have 2 shelves going.
I have a guy that doesn't want to delegate anywhere. He wants to do it all himself. I get advice on like this there.
Yeah, well, okay, then that's use the shelf idea to identify the root problem as much as possible. Get it in something that you can work with and then build your packages on it. So, you'll have to do some thinking on these things, but it'll really be fun. All of a sudden, you'd get that shelf down. Once you get the shelf down, then it's a lot easier to get the packages in there.
Do you find that there's a problem with maybe some of your key men in utilizing this, that they codify some of these things to the place where when they run into a guy with a particular problem, they're just going to haul out an old shelf with its old packages? Or is that recommended?
Well, never to preach. If he hauls out his old notes and tells his guy to do the same kind of study he did, fine. As long as he doesn't preach it at the guy. Then the following week, they get together and they discuss what his guy came up with on basically the same study he did. So he doesn't necessarily have to do the study over again.
How many men can you effectively handle like that?
Oh, not very many. You know, here we're talking about your top four or five guys, I suppose. And, of course, with the lesser problems, with the younger men, your problems, or not just your problems either. This is problem solving we've been talking about. You do the same thing on things you want to build into their lives, either doctrinal things or advanced character traits. Yeah.
For most part, Harmony's packages, like the problems, is do you always let the person know what you're doing, or are there times when
you
may have assignments that you want him to do?
No, I always let him know what we're doing, what we want to accomplish.
If he has a problem with confidence,
that's
well known to him, or integrity, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
So if you spotted something in his life that, that you saw was a problem, but he didn't recognize it, would you tell him what the problem was and have to do something? Okay. You would just assign a package that might help him in that problem without letting him know.
Mm-mm. Head on. Eyes wide open. We better close. Father, we thank you for these 3 days together. And Lord, we pray that you would enable us to become more effective in our helping and training men. Lord, that we might begin and develop ministries at bases that would bring forth much fruit, that would create good relationships with the chaplains and with the officials of the bases, and that many laborers would come forth. Lord, help us all to learn how to use tools that will enable us to help men become more perfectly aligned with your desires for their lives, that problems might be erased, that important traits would be built in. Help us, Lord, to have the right motivation in our training and building in the lives of men, that they might glorify you. And Lord, we thank you again for your presence with us and pray that you'd prepare our hearts for the message tonight. Christ's name, amen.